It happened more than 44 years ago. A UFO event seen over Tehran, Iran, defied logic and explanation to highly trained pilots, tower operators, and military officials. The government intelligence report that documented the story is only 4 pages in length. But back in 1996, this one document became the motivation to create the Black Vault, and it continues to serve as the inspiration to keep it running now, nearly 2.5 decades later. Stay tuned. You're about to journey inside the Black Vault. That's right, everybody. As always, thank you so much for tuning in and making this your live stream or your podcast of choice. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., founder and creator of theblackvault.com, and welcome to all of you new subscribers, whether it be right here on YouTube and you're watching or on whatever podcast feed you're listening into. I do appreciate all of the new subscribers that have come in the last couple of weeks. That serves as part of my motivation to do this show. Now, here's why. I want to talk about one specific UFO incident. It is infamously known as what's called the 1976 Iran incident. Now, this happened just then, 1976, and this serves as the reason why I do what I do. When I was 15 years old, some of you have heard me touch on this story before. When I was 15 years old, I was fascinated by UFOs. And I searched on the internet, and you see all these different types of stories, and a lot of them are just like today. Not substantiated, no evidence, many claims, but nothing is backed up. For whatever reason, I was drawn to U.S. government documents, searched online, and to my surprise, found one that was only 4 pages in length, which set me off on the journey. And from 1996 through today, and I'm probably not going to stop anytime soon, it has served as the inspiration for me to create the Black Vault, keep it running, and amass 2.2 million pages on every government secret, not just UFOs. So I thought it would be fun to kind of take a look back, because this is an incident that, although those that have been around UFOs a lot has likely heard the story, those that have subscribed to this channel before have likely heard the story, or at least smaller versions of it. But for all of those new subscribers, all of you that are interested in UFOs, that has never been really involved in the subject, you haven't picked up a book and you're just kind of getting your feet wet, I thought it would be fun to share with you why I got started. And if you don't really care why I got started, and I don't blame you, it's a cool story in the process, because this 4-page government document, in my opinion, still defies explanation in what we are essentially dealing with. So let me just go ahead and start and tell you a little bit about that story. When I came across this document, I've never claimed to have found this originally. This was one that had been around for many, many years. And this 4-page document was what I was so inspired by, simply because of the content therein. And in fact, it was so cool, I never thought that the United States government would give this thing out. When I was 15, that is what launched me doing Freedom of Information Act requests. And in this case, specifically to the Defense Intelligence Agency. Now, if you're like me, at least at the time in 1996, I had never heard of the Defense Intelligence Agency. We've got the big guys. We've got the CIA And obviously the NSA has become much more popular in the last 5-10 years. But back in 1996, me anyway, I had no idea what this agency was. And allegedly, this agency was giving out this 4-page government document, which I thought, there's no way that this could be something that is real. The website that I found it on talked about the Freedom of Information Act and the fact that you can get it for yourself. So I thought to myself, okay, well, if I can get it, I'll file this whatever Freedom of Information Act thing, whatever that is, and see what I would get. To my surprise, that 4-page document came. If you're watching on YouTube, what you're looking at is the original letter from 1996 that I received just weeks after I filed the request, which for anybody who's dabbled in FOIA here in 2021, you know that it doesn't take a couple of weeks. So times were certainly different, but it also helped that the document had been released before, and it also helped that I was very, very specific with what I was looking for. But it did not take long at all. This was the 4-page document that you see. Just 4, not huge, but it told a story that got me hooked. I'm going to do something now that I really never do, and I hate it, and I might regret doing it, but I'm going to read the document to you. I'm doing this for obviously the audio version so you can hear the whole thing, but I also want you to hear what I read. I want you to understand what motivated that 15-year-old punk kid to start researching not only UFOs, but later everything else. And again, if you don't care about that part, doesn't matter. It's a really cool story anyway. I don't like reading on this channel, but I think in this particular case, it's absolutely appropriate. This was page 1 that you're looking at on the video. I'm going to come back to this for a reason. And let me start reading the intelligence report to you. Just to reiterate, this came directly to me from the Department of Defense's Defense Intelligence Agency. Not leaked information, not anything third hand, not anything I found in a dark alley that I can't tell you about. It is something that the government will give you. Here we go. This report forwards information concerning the sighting of a UFO in Iran on 19 September 1976. At about 12:30 a.m. on 19 September 1976, the Imperial Iranian Air Force Command Post received 4 telephone calls from citizens living in the Shemran area of Tehran, saying that they had seen strange objects in the sky. Some reported a kind of bird-like object, while others reported a helicopter with a light on. There were no helicopters airborne at that time. The command post called B.G. Yousefi, Assistant Deputy Commander of Operations. After he told the citizen it was only stars and had talked to Mehrabad Tower, he decided to look for himself. He noticed an object in the sky similar to a star, bigger and brighter. He decided to scramble an F-4 from Shiroki Air Force Base to investigate. At 01:30 hours on the 19th, the F-4 took off and proceeded to a point about 40 nautical miles north of Tehran. Due to its brilliance, the object was easily visible from 70 miles away. As the F-4 approached a range of 25 nautical miles, he lost all instrumentation and communications. He broke off the intercept and headed back to Shiroki. When the F-4 turned away from the object and apparently was no longer a threat to it, the aircraft regained all instrumentation and communications. At 01:40 hours, a second F-4 was launched. The backseater acquired a radar lock on at 27 nautical miles. 12 o'clock high position with the vertical rate of, with the VC or rate of closure at 150 nautical miles per hour. As the range decreased to 25 nautical miles, the object moved away at speed that was visible on the radar scope and stayed at 25 nautical miles. The size of the radar return was comparable to that of a 707 tanker. The visual size of the object was difficult to discern because of its intense brilliance. The light that it gave off was that of a flashing strobe light arranged in a rectangular pattern and alternating blue, green, red, and orange in color. The sequence of the lights was so fast that all the colors could be seen at once. The object and the pursuing F4 continued on a course to the south of Tehran, when another brightly lit object, estimated to be one-half to one-third the apparent size of the moon, came out of the original object. This second object headed straight towards the F4 at a very fast rate of speed. The pilot attempted to fire an AIM-9 missile at the object. But at that instant, his weapons control panel went off, and he lost all communications. At this point, the pilot initiated a turn and a negative G dive to get away. As he turned, the object fell and trailed at what appeared to be about 3 to 4 nautical miles. As he continued in his turn away from the primary object, the second object went to the inside of his turn, then returned to the primary object for a perfect rejoin. Shortly after the second object joined up with the primary object, another object appeared to come out of the other side of the primary object, going straight down, at a great rate of speed. The F4 crew had regained communications, and the weapons control panel, and watched the object approach the ground, anticipating a large explosion. This object appeared to come to rest gently on the earth and cast a very bright light over an area of about 2 to 3 kilometers. The crew descended from their altitude to 25 miles to 15 miles and continued to observe and mark the object's position. They had some difficulty in adjusting their night visibility for landing, so after orbiting Mehrabad a few times, they went out for a straight landing. There was a lot of interference on the UHF, and each time they passed through a mag bearing of 150 degrees from Mehrabad, they lost their communications, and the INS fluctuated from 30 degrees to 50 degrees. The one civil airliner that was approaching Mehrabad during this same time experienced communications failure in the same vicinity, but it did not report seeing anything. While the F4 was on a long final approach, the crew noticed another cylinder-shaped object, about the size of a T-bird at 10 miles, with bright, steady lights on each end and a flasher in the middle. When queried, the tower stated there was no other known traffic in the area. During the time that the object passed over the F4, the tower did not have a visual on it, but picked it up after the pilot told them to look between the mountains and the refinery. During daylight, the F4 crew was taken out to the area in a helicopter where the object apparently had landed. Nothing was noticed at the spot where they thought the object landed, which was a dry lake bed, but as they circled off to the west of the area, they picked up very noticeable beeper signal. At the point where the return was the loudest was a small house with a garden. They landed and asked the people within if they had noticed anything strange last night. The people talked about a loud noise and a very bright light, like lightning. The aircraft and area where the object is believed to have landed are being checked for possible radiation. Now, additional comments were added at the end of the report. Actual information contained in this report was obtained from source in conversation with a subsource and IIAF, or Imperial Iranian Air Force, pilot of one of the F4s. More information will be forwarded when it becomes available. So I don't like to read. You can probably see why. I'm sorry for reading that, but I felt it was important. I feel that you should hear exactly what the words are from this intelligence report, just like I had read them when I was 15. As you can see why, there are some amazing details in here. Obviously, you may want to go back, download the document, re-listen to this on the visual aspect to this, how it all unfolded, where things were turning into each other's turn and so on, because at first reading, it may be a little bit confusing, but you can see that this is technology that was highly advanced. This was something that really we can't even attribute to this day about. And on top of all of that, it's pretty darn interesting. I want to go back to page 1, like I had told you about. There's a reason why this page is important. Now, keep in mind, this was 1976. This was 7 years after the United States government and the United States military said, hey, we're not interested in UFOs anymore. With the close of Project Blue Book, that was it. They were done. They felt they solved the mystery. There was no phenomena. The objects were easily explainable. And that's it. Case closed, so to speak. In the documentation that they made, namely a UFO fact sheet, they said that no government agency had ever taken an interest in UFOs after the close of Project Blue Book. Yet, we have this four-page document. Why I point out page number one is at the highlighted areas. Now, here in the middle of the page, you're going to see FM, USDAO. That's the United States Defense Attaché Office in Tehran. That's where it originated. It was sent to the Defense Intelligence Agency, Washington, D.C. So you can see here, let me get the laser pointer. You can see this is the from, this is the to, going to Defense Intelligence Agency. But this report didn't just go there. The Defense Attaché Office decided there was a long list of agencies and personnel that should be read in to this UFO case for whatever reason. The National Security Agency was one of them. The Central Intelligence Agency was another. The Secretary of State was another. This is the United States Air Force, the United States Navy, so Chief Naval Officer. These were all of the military branches that claimed they had no interest in UFOs, and yet they were on the receiving end of these types of UFO reports. But here's the kicker for me, because I don't see this a lot, the White House. So 7 years after the government solved the mystery, they were making sure that the United States president was read in on this specific UFO case. Why is that? And to be honest with you, I have no idea. But they felt the need. I started a hunt after I began filing FOIA request after FOIA request. And yes, at the age of 15, I was filing 30, 40, 50 in a day, sending them out. At the time, you couldn't do it via email. You had to do postal mail. So I was saving all my pennies to get every stamp I could and lifted, I think, a couple from my dad. Sorry, Dad, when I was that age, and sent them all out. But I was looking for additional information on this specific case. There's not a whole lot. You remember that part that says that the area was being tested for radiation? I never found any test results, never found any follow-ups, never found any investigations, and never found any resolutions to the case. But I did find one document within the National Security Agency, that one that was on the distribution list. This was written by a Captain Henry S. Shields. He was from the United States Air Forces in Europe. He wrote his own, I would say, opinion or preface to the report, and I'm going to read that to you. Captain Shields says, sometime in his career, each pilot can expect to encounter strange, unusual happenings, which will never be adequately or entirely explained by logic or subsequent investigation. The following article recounts just such an episode as reported by two F-4 Phantom crews of the Imperial Iranian Air Force during late 1976. No additional information or explanation of the strange events has been forthcoming. The story will be filed away and probably forgotten, but it makes interesting and possibly disturbing reading. That's an amazing thing for a United States Air Force captain to say, given the fact that it was the United States Air Force that said, we solved the mystery. Yet Captain Henry Shields was right, that this report and the story would likely be filed away and probably forgotten. And that's what happened for many years. When it finally came out in the late 1970s, early 1980s, the internet wasn't really around then, at least, you know, obviously like it is now, infant stages and ARPANET and all that. But the internet wasn't around for the general public, so you couldn't just log on and download this document. And in fact, there's only one book that I believe originally broke it, and I think that that's above top secret, but I could be wrong on that. It may have been Barry Greenwood and Lawrence Fawcett's book. And not Timothy Goods. But again, regardless, there were very few books that were talking about it. And so this pilot was right. And years would go by where then his words would surface, because this didn't originally come out for many, many years. But I want to point out one other thing that you may or may not have noticed about that original four-page document. Did you notice that it really wasn't classified? There were no classification markings on it. The original intelligence report, from what I can deduce, was considered unclassified. That's an amazing story to consider unclassified. Yet Henry S. Shields' version, the captain from the U.S. Air Force, his was not. You can see on the screenshot here a etched out stamp. Now, if you zoom in, you can easily see that that's a secret stamp. So Henry S. Shields, his report and his comments on it were considered secret. Now, why? Some of you may ask, if you're looking, why is this confidential stamp here? Documents can be downgraded, but not declassified. So sometimes top secret documents can turn into secret documents, or secret documents can turn into confidential documents, confidential being the lowest level grade of secrecy there is. And so that's a downgrade. And then here's a declassification stamp when it first essentially went out of the walls of the United States military in 1981. But this was classified at the time it was written. Why? If the phenomena was easily explainable, there's really no secrecy about it. And yet they felt the need to classify a captain of the United States Air Force and his opinion on what was really going on. One of the other key elements to the 1976 Iran incident is the routing slip that was attached to the actual four-page document. This does not get as much, I would say, attention as the four-page document. In fact, a lot of people don't even know that this exists. But when documents are circulated, there's a routing slip on top. Now, sometimes that's just to show who had their hands on the folder or the document, where it was going. But this specific one had a few different comments on it. Now, if you're watching the YouTube video, you can see it's hard to read. It's not easy. But if you look, you can see some key parts here that really makes this a mind-blowing event. The routing slip, you can see here, it's very hard to read this part, but it says it meets all the criteria necessary for a valid study of a UFO phenomena. So that shows that this case, even though UFOs were solved, within the intelligence community, they're saying this is what we need to essentially investigate the mystery. Why would you need to do that if you already solved it? But behind the scenes was a different story than what they were trying to tell the general public. Here's why it met the criteria. The credibility of many of the witnesses was high. An Air Force general, qualified air crews, and experienced tower operators. Visual sightings were confirmed by radar. Similar electromagnetic effects were reported by three separate aircraft. There were physiological effects on some crew members, i.e. loss of night vision due to the brightness of the object. And lastly, an inordinate amount of maneuverability was displayed by the UFOs. In essence, this case had it all for them to look into and investigate, all on a phenomena that they had solved. So you can see with just these few pages, and forgive my broken reading there, I hope that it made sense and had the same impact that this document did on me when I was 15, but you may want to read it yourself just so it's not my crackly voice. This is what got me started, and this is what inspired me to do what I do. And this is what told me that the UFO phenomena, despite what the U.S. military and the government want us to believe, is not solved. They can't solve it. It's technology that far surpasses our own. It has not bad witnesses like some television programs depict, but high-ranking and highly trained individuals that are seeing these things, that can't explain them, that are encountering them and having an issue. I hope this serves as an inspiration for all of you. I hope you enjoyed this video and this podcast. I hate to sound like a broken record, but I'm going to ask you. If you're watching it, please hit that thumbs up button. Make sure you're subscribed to this channel and turn the notifications on. If you're listening to the podcast version, thank you for doing so, no matter your platform, whether it be iTunes, Google Play Store, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever it is, a review is so incredibly helpful. I aim for the 5 stars. I won't tell you what to do, but that's what I aim for. Please, please consider doing that. Thank you all for tuning in. This is John Greenwald Jr. signing off, and we will see you next time.